Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Barn Burner MMA Show presented by Bet the Farm Podcast. We've got UFC 271 Adesanya versus Whitaker 2 to talk about today. As usual, I'm your host, Dino the Pig, and I'm joined by the Burn Dog himself. Burn Dog, UFC 271. Ready?
We're back with the best card of the year, in my opinion. So far, it is just absolutely stacked. We're not going to talk too much about the early prelims and the prelims just because we have such a jam-packed actual main card. So we're going to try to get you the most entertaining bets, you know, because half the people aren't watching during the early prelims or the prelims, unless you're a fight freak like us. So we're mainly going to focus there, but we got one on the earlies and one on the prelims for you. So you want to take it from there, Dino?
Yeah, let's go ahead, and we're going to jump into UFC 271. But before we do, always got to reflect on UFC 260. Nagano, dominant fashion over Ciryl Gane. I was in Aruba. I didn't have a chance to watch it. Fill me in. What were thoughts on the whole card?
I came home from downtown Fort Lauderdale to see the Francis fight. I literally paid for a $40 solo Uber so I can get back and watch the fight. And to be honest,
was it worth your $40?
No, it was worth every penny because that was one of the absolute eye-opening fights I've ever seen. I was just sitting there, jaw to the floor, like, what's going on? What Francis is wrestling Ciryl Gane,
like, easily.
I mean, hip toss after hip toss after hip toss, and it was fantastic. I loved it. We were rooting for Francis more than just the money. We wanted him to win so that, one, we can see him fight Tyson Fury, and two, because he's a good guy who went through hell to get to where he is today. So I enjoyed it. I made the power move of leaving the bar to see it, and I was thoroughly impressed by Francis.
One thing I had to bring up is the fact that during your handicap and what we talked about in nauseam you on social media and everything was, I want him to go out there and win so that he could give a big fuck you to Dana. But guess what? Dana wasn't there when it was time to put the belt around his waist.
Dude, and what a half-ass answer, too. Just, I was taking calls. You're taking calls.
Does he ever do that?
He has done it before, but on a fight night. Not the heavyweight championship of the world with an interim versus a standing heavyweight champion. Like, I mean, come on, dude. You can wait 30 minutes. Yeah. Like,
that didn't sit right with me either, whatever. But I don't really care at the end of the day.
I don't care.
Who cares if he puts
all
the belt
of this is more
him.
WWE style drama to talk about,
which is good for us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great for us.
But what I didn't honestly, I haven't even gone back and watched the whole fight yet. There's been a lot going on in my life between coming back from Aruba and having a birthday and family and whatnot. But I haven't gone back to watch the whole Figueiredo Moreno trilogy. What were your thoughts?
I mean, it was kind of a boring fight.
Because Moreno thinks that he won still.
I believe he won.
Really?
Yes. I thought that he had done enough to win. I was not upset with the decision for Figueiredo to win. I mean, I think it was 1-3 for Figgy and 2-4 for Moreno. I was pretty confident in that. I think that Moreno just didn't do enough to in the fifth round to get over the fact that Figueiredo had knocked him down three times. Two times he knocked him down. They weren't hot, heavy knockouts, but two times he hit him down. You know what I mean? Knockdown.
Yeah.
He caused a knockdown. The third time was a well-placed leg kick, but I think the judges scored that as a knockdown too. We don't know where that really falls into. So it was an entertaining fight, a little bit boring, but also, like, when the fireworks started, they were going at it. You did not have any issues with cardio on Figueiredo's side. Brandon Moreno brought the pace, but you could see it was almost like two well-versed chess players. They didn't know. They were trying to figure each other out even well into the later rounds, and that kind of gave us a little less action than the previous two. But, you know, I was glad that I made it. I got home at the end of the second round.
Okay.
And my buddy filled me in on what had happened in the first and second. So
awesome. Well, hey, UFC 270 is in the books. It's time to move on to UFC 271, which is just the first of many unbelievable weekends we've got coming up. Between the fight nights coming up with Fazeev and RDA, and then we've got Colby, Masvidal. There's so much good stuff coming, but let's focus on the here, the now. We do this show for a reason. That's to put money in your pockets. Let's talk about our favorite bets of UFC 271. Let's start on the early prelim card. I believe we've got a light heavyweight bout, Fabio Chiron versus Carlos Olberg, that you've been eyeing, huh?
Yeah, if you've been following the show, you guys know I love my city kickboxing guys, especially ones that work heavily with Dan Hooker and Israel Adesanya. And that's Carlos Olberg. We bet on him before. We're one-on-one betting on him. In his last fight, he let us down, but he surprisingly showed the will to get through all three rounds. And he's fighting somebody who is 7-3, 7-0 versus non-UFC competitors, 0-3 versus UFC competitors. So he has not stepped up to the plate when he's facing UFC caliber fighters in general. But then you got to remember, Carlos Olberg is a championship-winning kickboxer. In glory, he is a world-class striker, and it shows when he's in the ring. He has issues with cardio, but we have two light heavyweights. I was on the under here till I saw the line for Olberg to win by KO TKO -130. I really like that. He's -270 something in that range. Too much juice for me on a guy that doesn't have cardio. You know, that's one of my pet peeves when it comes to betting larger fighters. So he's -255. I get him all the way down to -130. I think if he wins, it's going to be by KO TKO. I think if it goes to a decision, it's probably not going to go his way. That's how the last fight turned out for him. So I'm really liking the value, bringing it all the way down to -130.
All right. A nice early undercard fight for you guys to watch. If you guys are, like you said, the fight fanatics like us and turn it on right when the early prelims start, you want some action, that's the action you're going to get. And we also know Fabio Chiron. I mean, even in his – I think he's only fought twice in the UFC, and his first fight was just
– Three times.
Well, the one that we bet on against
him. I think one might have been Contender Series. I'm not sure.
I believe so. So let's move on to my favorite bet of the prelims, and we're going to go all the way up to – the second to last fight on the prelim card. It is a women's flyweight bout with number 12th ranked Roxanne Modafferi versus number 15th ranked Casey O'Neill. This is just a very funky fight to discuss and to digest. It's Roxanne Modafferi's last fight ever in mixed martial arts professionally. She's turning 40 years old soon. She's 25-20 in her career. That's a lot of octagon time as a professional, but now she's facing the fresh meat, the girl that is supposed to be groomed as one of the next great flyweights coming up, Casey O'Neill. She's won 3 in a row. The interesting thing about this fight is that we know one thing about Roxanne. She's going to stand and she's going to scrap with you. She's not easy. She's easy to take down, but she's not easy to finish. She's not someone that you're going to finish necessarily. She's a veteran. Casey O'Neill, though, I just think everything about her game, she is naturally a kickboxer, but brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and has some Muay Thai experience based off of the camp that she's training out of. I think Casey O'Neill here is -380 for a reason. This is a farewell tour for Roxanne Modafferi. She just wanted to take a fight versus a top 15 contender, someone that's ranked. And I think this is all the writing's on the wall for a shellacking from Casey O'Neill. I mean, I was at UFC 266 to watch Modafferi versus Tyler Santos, and it was ugly the whole time. She just kept taking her down, and I expect the same thing from Casey O'Neill. Although she is naturally a kickboxer, I expect her to go and you know, inflict her will and get some takedowns, control the whole fight from start to finish. So, what's my bet on the situation? She's -380. She's simply a parlay piece. I'm going to be including Casey O'Neill in a few of my parlays. I think that's one of those minus 380s that you throw into some nice parlays that you expect an automatic win from. So I just wanted to talk about it because she is part of a parlay that I will talk about a little bit later, but I see her as a great parlay piece and to easily come out victorious. I'm a little concerned about going with the KO or TKO or going with the submission. It's very hard to finish Modafferi. I mean, it's not the hardest thing, but she's a veteran, and this girl is very young and fresh. She's 24 years old versus a 39-year-old. So I'm just going with her as a nice parlay piece on the money line.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to bet this, but since you wanted to talk about it, I did find a little bit of value here. I'm going to start with saying that I don't disagree with your handicap at all. One, we've learned our lesson from big favorites in parlay pieces. I've gotten away from it. I think it's something that you need to think about when you add big parlay pieces. You know, a minus 300, a minus 380, and maybe something close to even so that you can get, you know, close to even odds. I just think that it's bit us in the ass on this show before. And again, I don't disagree with the cap. The handicap is there. It's just that I think it's a little bit of recency bias from her last two fights. We've seen her come out and beat three very legitimate flyweight contenders. All contenders. Andrea Lee, Macy Barber, and Antonina Shevchenko. When she beat her, she was fresh into the UFC. She's not the same fighter that she was, you know, 3 years later. But I think that she's shown that she can wrestle and specifically top control time, will her way to victories against, again, two contenders, Macy Barber and Andrea Lee. So I'm going to take in. Just to let everyone know, she's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 fights have gone to decision. She hasn't been finished since July 2018. So I'm going to go Modafferi by decision plus 500. It's not a fade of your bet. It's really just I see a lot of value here. It's something I'm putting a tenner on. I'm not going even close to a unit on it. It's just a little, you know, if you just get to wherever you're going to watch it and this is a fight that's on, you know, throw a tenner on it, because I think that if, especially this has all the writings on the wall of a Roxanne Modafferi win. Normally she's a huge underdog. Everybody's talking about her for this reason or the next, gives her that emotional edge of being an underdog, and this being her last fight, I could see it going into a storybook ending for somebody who has 50 fights under her belt. So I'm not confident in that play whatsoever. The numbers back it up. My heart says she's going to get her ass kicked. But Casey O'Neill being so fresh and new to the UFC, she's got a couple fights under her belt, but by no means is she a veteran. So we'll see what happens on the big stage, because eyes will be on her. So.
Yeah, it'll also be a little bit emotional, especially on Modafferi's side. She already announced that this will be her last fight as a professional. But, hey, I mean, I don't know if we're technically going to the barn on this one, but, you know.
I'm not going to the barn for Roxanne Modafferi. Okay.
All right. All right, let's move to the main card.
It's like bringing a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah, a fucking butter knife. All right, let's move to the main card of UFC 20. Or I was going to say 2022, because I'm so used. It's already feeling so weird as the start of 22 to just keep saying 2022. But we're going to the main card of UFC 271. It starts with a very nice lightweight bout. I'm excited about this one. Bobby Green coming off of a beautiful knockout win over Raging Al Iaquinta versus Nasrat Haqparastu. On the other end of the spectrum, Hooker was on a few fight losing streak. He faces Hooker on the main card at UFC 266. I was there in attendance in Vegas, and Hooker had his way, took him down with ease, which is something that we never really saw, especially coming out of your favorite gym as a kickboxer training with Adesanya. Yeah. You don't really see them take guys down much, and he did that with Will versus Nasrat Haqparastu. And you know I'm a big Haqparastu follower. Minus 140, Bobby Green, plus 120, Haqparastu. Initial thoughts?
Initial thought is what we had a nickname for him. It was funny. Baccarat, or like we called him
Baccarat or something.
Yeah, Baccarat. There we go. We called him Baccarat, something of that nature. excuse me. And we've been watching him since his first UFC fight. So we're very familiar on his end. We're very familiar with Bobby Green. I think I came at you about Bobby Green not – you were saying Bobby Green didn't have power in his hands. And what happened? He came out and beat this shit out of Ray Janal.
I took Ray Janal as a big underdog.
Yeah, and I played devil's advocate there. But
my point still stands valid. That was one of his first KOs in God knows how long.
Yes, I'll agree.
That's not his game.
It's not his game. It's not. But anyways, I'm not going to your brother, one of your brother's biggest things is not falling into recency bias. So I've been trying to follow the farmer there when it comes to not looking too much into that last fight. So I'm not going to listen. Dan Hooker was too big of a step for Baccarat, and I think this is a step up for Bobby Green. Ray Janal had not fought in so long. You can tell his heart wasn't there anymore. He was rusty, very rusty in that ring, and I think Bobby Green really just saw the opportunity to attack, and he teed off on Ray Janal, and he's got the boxing to do it. And the thing is about Ray Janal, the reason I think that it was such a good matchup for Bobby Green is that Al's best attribute is boxing. So when he's getting hit, he reverts to boxing, and Bobby Green's so lengthy that really really went his way. And Baccarat is not going to stand in boxing range, especially after the Dan Hooker fight. He's not going to stand in boxing range, and I think due to his volume of kicks and knees, I think he's going to be able to come in and out of the pocket better against Bobby Green than Ray Janal did. And we've seen that when Bobby Green can't use his boxing, he looks a little lost out there. He's not as crispy as he usually is, and with that wide long stance that Baccarat uses, I think he's going to be able to come in and out of range at his pace, dictate the pace. I think he's a very quick fighter, and I like him as a dog here at +120. What do you think?
Okay, I'm going a little bit on the other end of the spectrum here. I'm not really looking towards the side here. I'm looking at the over under. So before Bobby Green knocked out Al Iaquinta, he had gone to 8 straight decisions. So far, since Nasrat Hasprat has been in the UFC, 7 of his 8 fights have gone to decision. This tells me the over-under is 2.5, and it's very juiced to the over. They expect this to go over. Now, that last 2 minutes and 30 seconds, to me, I'm finding value instead to eat that last 2 minutes and 50 seconds, and we're going to take this fight to go to a decision at -175. The over is at -220 range right now, I believe, and I can get them to go to decision at -175. That's where I'm going with this bet. I think that the way that these guys fight, especially, you know, Hasprat, he's 2-2 in his last fights. He feels like he's got a lot to prove. He's trying to get into the top 10 in the rankings versus Bobby Green, who is as confident as can be. But what we know about Bobby Green is he's going to try to lure you into his antics and try to, and he's always keeping distance. He's never coming at you with full aggression. That just doesn't really happen. Al Iaquinta, his nickname is Raging Al for a reason. He's going to come at you, and that's why he was able to get got. But what Bobby Green is going to do is stand there and try to use his length and his distance and outpoint you. But guess what? I think what Hasprat, if he wants to, is going to try to go clinch, get to the cage. And I think that both of them have a mentality here based off of their two different situations coming into this fight off of recency is to show the best you that you are. And I don't think either of them showing the best that they are is trying to knock one of the other out. And for that reason, I think the over is locked. But I think that instead of taking the over, take it to go to decision, and you gain about 50 cents of juice on that. So I like this fight, -175 to go to decision.
Yeah, I mean, I love that handicap. I'd say that's what you call a veteran bet. -220 is a little bit too much to stomach on an over. And I think, you know, we've been talking about recency bias. We can't ignore the fact that he knocked, Bobby Green just knocked somebody out. But we can kind of hedge a little bit that way by taking to go the distance and gaining 50 cents on the dollar in juice. And that kind of hedges against what just happened. So, you know, we got to try our best not to fall into recency bias, but also remember that that doesn't mean we're not looking at the last fight. It means that we're not going to judge our entire handicap and look at a bigger sample size rather than just looking at the last fight. But that last fight is very important. Fighters can be riding waves of momentum because of something that happened during fight week, during that last fight. So that helps me kind of wrap up recency bias with a bow for the listeners, and also just applaud you on that handicap, because that's one thing I wasn't thinking about, and you made the light bulb go off in my head. The dirty boxing ability of Bobby Green is very good, and the cage clinching in that Muay Thai, you know, sort of attack. You know, upper body grappling against the cage, Hack Parass is very good at. So I didn't even think about that, but that makes me like the over even more. And I'll be tailing you on that -170 for sure. This is a time where we're not worried about the cushion because we're not parlaying it with anything.
Exactly. I love getting a nod of approval from the burn dog. You know, that always counts for something. So love it. Well, next fight on the main card is a bantamweight bout. Two unranked opponents, Kyler Phillips, pretty fresh into the UFC, very young, he's raw, but he's a -400 favorite over Marcelo Rojo. I'm going to throw this one to you and see if you've got any thoughts on the situation.
Hard pass.
Okay.
Hard pass. We're going to talk about it, but hard pass on the betting. It's just this... This is not a good fight to attack. Kyler Phillips is very good, but he's also young, so we don't know what we're going to get out of him. It's very, very volatile. So I think the volatility of this fight and all the unanswered questions that we have makes it hard to handicap, and I'm out on that. I mean, if you tied my hands behind my back, put a gun to my head, and said pick a bet, I'd pick Kyler Phillips by KO TKO. But I'm not going to deal with that.
Yeah. So I think what we've seen from Kyler Phillips in his, you know, young, you know, professional career in the UFC so far is that he's going to throw hands, and he, in his last fight, almost had the knockout. The guy was wobbled. It was very questionable as to whether the ref should have stopped it or not. He didn't, decided to let it go on, and then he emptied the gas tank. Second round, he comes out flat. Third round comes out, and he's given it his all. He's got heart, and that's what I love from a guy like this. And there's a reason he's -400. This is my second parlay piece. I'm going to throw Kyler Murray. Kyle. I still want to say Kyler Murray, man. Kyler Phillips in as a parlay
both,
piece.
They're both short. they're the same height.
Probably, I would say the same way, but there's no way. But I'm going to take Kyler Phillips as my second parlay piece with that O'Neal bet, and that's going to be a money line play at -400 with a -380 O'Neal, I should say. And I will let you guys know soon the third leg that will complete this, and that'll be my piggy parlay of the week.
Honestly, I'll add a lean here because once I saw the line on the win by KO TKO, it's even. To get -425 down to even on KO TKO on someone that we've seen have explosive pop and power in their hands. I don't know much about Marcelo Rojo. I don't know if he's got a chin or not. I don't know what his striking's like. That's part of the reason why this is just a pass for me. I don't care enough to do that much research on a -425 favorite fight, so I'm passing, but I gotta lean KO TKO at +100. I'm sure Vegas is doing that for a reason, but also that's a huge value jump, and we just see him put somebody on wheels in just the wobbly express. So I mean, why not? I'll add it to a lean if I get in the mood and I'm on a hot streak. You know, I could potentially add it while I'm watching, you know, right before the fight starts. So I'll add it to the leans.
All right, well, let's move on next to the middleweight bout of the evening. We've got number 3 ranked Jared Cannonier versus number 4 ranked Derek Brunson. One's coming off of a decent victory. One's coming off of a pretty brutal loss for Cannonier. This has got all the makings of an interesting fight. Cannonier, minus 165 favorite versus Brunson at plus 145. We know Brunson, first of all, he's aging. He's already talking about potentially ending his career in the next last few fights if he can get a shot at the world title. Meanwhile, Cannonier coming off a loss, got a lot to prove, and he's a favorite for a reason, even though he is, you know, I mean, he's the number 3 ranked opponent. Cannonier, the big heavy hitter versus Brunson, the guy who at all costs is probably going to try to take you down if he can. What are you seeing here?
I think Brunson's going to knock him the fuck out.
Really?
Yeah, Brunson is – I have a lot of respect for Brunson. After his last couple fights, he has just shown that he will not give up until he gets back to a championship fight. So I just think he's an all-around fighter. I mean, his wrestling is outstanding. If he goes out and just wrestles Jared Cannonier, he's going to win this fight. The iffy part of this fight is if he tries to stand up with Cannonier and his, you know, cannons for hands. But still, I think that he is a more polished striker. I think he's better at countering than Cannonier. And I think if Cannonier comes in guns blazing like he normally does, which normally gets him in trouble, I think Derek Brunson's going to hit him with a check right hook and put him right to sleep. And if not, he's going to catch him with a lot of takedowns. As Cannonier is closing the distance, he loves to throw a stiff jab and then use that to close the distance and then follow up with a straight right. And I think that lines up perfectly for Derek Brunson and what he wants to do in this fight. And I think this really all comes down to what Derek Brunson wants to do. If he comes out, he's the more experienced fighter. He's a better fighter IQ. If he comes out and executes a good game plan, I am very confident that he's going to win this.
Yeah, so this is an interesting tale of two tapes here. I mean, you got Derek Brunson, who's coming off of a win versus Darren Till by submission. Obviously, he was going to take Darren Till down. There was never a doubt about that one. And then, I mean, that's two fights in a row that he's fought guys that just cannot defend the takedown, where he dominated Kevin Holland and took him down with absolute ease. Gets a KO win over Edmund Shabazian. On top of that, beats Ian Heinisch. Beats Elias Theodoro, sorry, I can't really pronounce his name. And his last loss is to the current champion, which is Israel Adesanya.
In 1 second. And he stopped the hype train on Heinisch, Shabazian, Kevin Holland, and Darren Till.
That's true.
Every single one.
Darren Till maybe was a not. Little, yeah.
Listen, Darren Till, I agree. I agree there that his hype train stopped a little bit back, but he still had that hype, lingering hype. Oh, it's Darren Till, and then
Darren Till hypes himself. Yeah,
and Darren Brunson is the hype killer. He should change his name to Hype Train, fucking Hype Train Robber or some shit. I don't know, but that one came out a little sideways. But he is perfect for stopping Jared Cannonier, and I'm slamming this. I really like Derek. Like, I haven't been this confident in a bet in a while, like a very long time. I really, really like this dog here at +132. Local books are already steaming down towards Brunson. Fight night, Brunson's gonna get steamed. I guarantee you he closes at under 120, probably 115 in some places. And I think Vegas is going to steam him. So I'm going to get on that gravy train before Brunson gets a chance to stop it.
Interesting thoughts. Yeah, I mean, like I said, to me, it's the tale of two tapes of recency. On one end, you've got Brunson, who's on an absolute heater right now. On the other end, you've got against very top contenders in the division. On the other end, I misspoke and I had just forgotten about how very recently that Cannonier beats Gastelum by decision. But before that was the brutal losses versus Whitaker, who absolutely destroyed him. But he's also got wins versus Jack Hermanson, Anderson Silva. I mean, some of he lost to Dominic Reyes via his KO.
Yeah.
The point is, these guys are both battle-tested. There's a reason they're both top five in the division. Now, let's talk about their style of play. So I think that there's a few things to think about here. They're both a little bit older. So Cannonier's 37. I believe Brunson's got to be 38, 39.
Hold on. I got it up right here.
He is 38.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got two guys kind of at the end of their careers. There's one thing that's for certain, is that Cannonier has a lot more strength than Brunson has. Point being, what we've seen from Brunson as of late, luckily, is even Gaslam was able to try to get some takedowns, but guess what? He's able to get out of those takedowns very quickly because of his pure strength. Now, can Brunson keep him down is my real question, because Brunson's had that problem even in the past. I mean, even in some of his wins, I mean, Till and Holland really don't count to me, but Shabazian was able to get out of some of those takedowns. I mean, Heinich is a striker, so that's the point, I guess, is what I'm getting at here, is how many guys are good at both takedown defense and getting off their back that he's fought in the last 3 to 4 years?
I mean, there's
path to victory, but that's not what you care about. You
there's
think
no
he's
wrestlers on this track record other than Jack Hermanson, and he got taken down in the first round by Jack Hermanson and then knocked him out at the end of the second round. And, I mean, I don't know if you watched the Kevin Gastelum fight. I wasn't mad about it. I had bet on Cannonier, but
I was
puckered up at the end.
Yeah, it was a close fight.
You know, tight butthole, waiting on that decision to see who'd win. I thought Gastelum had won that fight. But Gastelum is not a wrestler by any means.
No.
So, you know what I mean? You have Robert Whittaker, who he loses to. But, I mean, nobody has come out with the wrestling chops that Derek Brunson has. And you wanted to talk about matchup. I told you that he's going to knock him out with a check right hook when Cannonier comes to close distance. Cannonier sticks behind his jab. He's an orthodox fighter. You know what the biggest weakness for an orthodox fighter is? A southpaw with a big check right hook. And that's Derek Brunson. That's exactly what he who did he drop with that check right hook? He dropped Shabazian with the check right hook. And so the southpaw lines up very good against Cannonier, especially one with length like Brunson. So I think he has a stylistic matchup, in my opinion. I agree, Cannonier's battle-tested. I don't think I think Brunson has a caliber of wrestling that matches up well. Is Cannonier going to get up? I think so, a couple times. You know what I mean? But the longer it goes on, the bigger that, you know, muscled-out body is going to wear on him. And I think it just matches up very well.
Just to kind of put a bow on it on this one, I think Cannonier is just a little bit too strong for a guy like Brunson. I just think that his strength is going to help him, especially, I mean, what we've seen from Brunson is he's going to shoot at you. Now, we've got a guy like Cannonier who, I don't want to call him, you know, Derek Lewis by any means, but he's a guy that's made for a guy to come at him and throw one shot and not get in the fight. I think that he's also -165 for a reason. He's got the strength. I think that the stand-up game is there. If he could block some of those takedown defenses or even get up quickly and let Brunson gas himself, I'm a little concerned about the gas tank over there as well. I mean, on both sides, for sure. But I think Cannonier's got the bigger punch power. He's my third leg of the parlay. We're going O'Neal with Phillips and Cannonier. You parlay all three favorites together, you could get it at +160. I got a -380 favorite, -400 favorite, and a -165 favorite. I'll get +160. I didn't want to put too much exposure on individual bets throughout those because I like them all, but I think that's one way, as a singular bet, to enjoy the card with some favorites that I think are locks. And then guess what? That's the third leg of the parlay. Yeah, I can make a decision. I can make any bets I can or want to from there.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like we should take this to the barn.
I don't know what you're doing in the last two fights, so.
Okay. All right.
I don't know what you're doing.
We'll save it for later and we'll move on.
We'll decide. As usual, at the very end of the podcast, we'll give our flag plant, give our parlay. That was my piggy parlay. And then we'll take it to the barn. But as of now, it's up there. It's up there. I'm not the most confident. I'm wondering what you think about the next fight, which is the co-main event of the evening, our lone heavyweight battle of the night.
Number 11th ranked Tai Shui Tuivasa versus number 3 ranked Derek Lewis. The fight, obviously, is in Houston, Derek Lewis's hometown. He opens up as a minus 180 favorite, whereas Tuivasa is plus 155. Oh, boy. This is going to be an interesting fight. Over-under is 1.5, and that is for a reason. It's either a knockout, like very – I don't want to say quickly because you know Lewis's style. He's not just – he's not necessarily going to just, you know, go out there and throw everything at once. Like, and Tuivasa doesn't really do that either. They kind of catch people slipping, and yeah, that's what I expect out of this fight. The over 1.5 is sneaky, but give me your handicap because I already know what I'm taking.
Yeah, I'm sad that we gotta root against Tai Tuivasa, unfortunately, here.
Shit, we're not taking this one to the barn, buddy.
We're not taking it to the barn. I don't think this matches up well at all for Tuivasa. I mean, if he is able to play the long game, I think this could be a potential. If Tuivasa, I don't think Tuivasa will, but he could. This could be a Francis Derek Lewis fight coming at you. If Tuivasa does not want to engage, man, he just throw leg kicks and tap from far away. He's got the reach on Lewis, and Tuivasa has a very good fight IQ. He comes from the streets fighting. He knows fighting and loves watching it. And I think he's watched a lot of tape on Derek Lewis. Like you said, Derek Lewis isn't going to come. You're running at you, throwing big bombs. You know, they're both counter fighters. Unfortunately, we'll go back to our last Tuivasa cap. I think we said it all there. Tuivasa is a step back counter fighter who wants to get you coming at him, and that's where he's most powerful. And Derek Lewis is the same exact fighter. These are literally the same guys. Unfortunately, Derek Lewis has obviously more knockout power, but
It's not just more knockout power. He has fought in so much higher level of competition. Yeah. It's not even fucking funny.
I'm talking the style that they use to fight.
Yes, it's similar style.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're the same fighter in overall how good they are at fighting. I'm saying the way that they fight is the exact same. So I think we might have a Francis Derek Lewis fight looming here. But I think that Tuivasa doesn't really fight for the same reasons that other people do.
So you're saying Francis versus Lewis on the opposite side?
No, I'm saying Francis versus
the
first one.
Right, I'm saying the opposite side, whereas Lewis is going to dominate.
Nothing happens because they're so afraid of each other's power.
Okay, now I know what you mean.
But like I was alluding to, Tai is a fighter's fighter. He wants to come out and bang. And if he's got to get in there and take punches, he does. He's shown that he'll die on his shield to make a fight eventful, and that's why he's always going to have a job in the UFC. And that's why they're giving him a number 3 ranked fight, because he'll go out and they know that Tai Tuivasa is going to stand in the center of the ring and he's going to try his best to knock Derek Lewis out. And that's going to get him knocked out by Derek Lewis. It is, unfortunately.
Amen. I mean,
that's what's going to happen.
I think that people think that if you don't know Tai Tuivasa and you see his antics and you see some of his knockouts, you think that he's just going to charge you and throw hammers. This is not how he fights at all. And neither is Derek Lewis. He's the complete opposite. Here's how I see this fight going. I think that Derek Lewis is going to do exactly what Derek Lewis for the first round of every single fight. He's going to stay on the back. He always likes to stay by the cage because then he could read his opponent coming at him and try to make a move from there. At some point, I think big punches can be thrown. But you know what Derek Lewis is going to do? He's going to use that wrestling this time because we know good and well that Tai Tuivasa cannot defend a takedown for the fucking life of him. He just can't. I mean, if he's going to win, he's going to knock somebody out. That's the only way he wins. He won by decision. Shit. Back in 2018, it's been 4 years since he beat Andre Arlovsky by decision. Guess what? Andre Arlovsky is the decision master. He never fucking he always tries to go for a decision. That's Andre Arlovsky, and he'll be on this card earlier, and you guys will see the same thing. He is not the type that's going to come forward. He's much more methodical. Tuivasa is the same way. He gets knockouts, but he does it the same way Derek Lewis does it. I think that when they clinch, Derek Lewis, also think about this. what? Tuivasa, what? He's 260. We got Derek Lewis at 265. I think that Tuivasa books up for these types of fights. I think Derek Lewis is naturally far bigger than him. If he wants to take him down, he'll be able to. Francis showed us that recently. I mean, that's a different style, but Derek Lewis hasn't had an opportunity in his recent fights because of the guys he's fighting to showcase those skills. I think that Derek Lewis actually takes him down a few times and actually wins this by points, especially factoring how embarrassing of a loss that was in Houston fighting Ciryl Gane and just getting absolutely pieced up and taken down with ease. I think he's a lot more motivated for this fight. He knows it's not a 5-round fight. It's a 3-round fight. He could do whatever the fuck he wants. He's not going to gas out. My vote is on Derek Lewis to win this fight. I think it's going to be by points. And on top of that, my prop pick of this is Derek Lewis by decision at plus 700. Yeah.
I'm just...
Plus 700.
I'm a little blown away. I take that handicap and throw it out the fucking window, bro. Derek Lewis is not doing any wrestling. You're crazy. That's honestly... Dude, Derek Lewis is there to knock people out and not get knocked out himself. It's every... When was
he hasn't had an opportunity like this.
He doesn't need an opportunity like this. He got his opportunity. He got paid to fight Ciryl Gane in Houston. He made the big bucks. He lost. He said, I'm never fighting. He hates fighting 5-round
fights. He hasn't had an opponent like this where he can utilize that type of skill. Versus an inferior opponent. Inferior opponent.
I mean, yeah, you'd have to go back past Francis and Ciryl, but even then... He's never changed. He's not shown any sign of it. I don't know if you watched Derek Lewis interviews any time recently.
Yeah. He wants to fight quick fights.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't mean that he's not going to try to point him.
He's not
win by points.
He's not pointing anybody, dude.
I don't know.
He's not pointing anybody. And I'm on Lewis minus 125 by KO, TKO.
I can't take him to the bar with you because we both took a money line. I'm taking him to win also. I think that there's my prop bet is by decision at 700. Yeah. I think that there is a path to victory by him winning by points, maybe getting a takedown or two. I'm not saying that that's exactly how the fight could go. If they want to scrap, who do I trust more? Derek Lewis.
Exactly, and they're going to scrap. My whole point was that Ty is going to scrap. He's there to scrap, and so is Derek Lewis. And
I think they might be a little apprehensive.
This is
I think the over. This is maybe the over of 1.5.
They printed out this game script and handed it to Derek Lewis on a silver platter and said, go knock somebody out for us, please. Please go knock somebody out for us on this card. We need fireworks. All right? That's exactly what they did. They printed out. Who is going to get knocked out by Derek Lewis first? And they put the top 15 in, and Ty Tuivasa came out. And they said, ding, 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 co-main event for Izzy fucking... Whitaker. Izzy Whitaker. Like, this is exactly what they're doing, bro. It's a business.
That's funny.
And honestly, Ty still might win because Derek Lewis doesn't like to get hit. He does not like to get hit. You know what I mean? And Ty is so long.
He should have lost to Greg Hardy. He was wobbled.
I agree. But that feeds right into my point.
That was to Greg Hardy.
No, the Greg Hardy
fight feeds to your point of a knockout. Yeah, yeah. I agree.
No, of Tuivasa being a scrapper and scrapping when he shouldn't have scrapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he gets a little wobbled, he might
had that fight and
if
then
he gets shook by one Derek Lewis punch, then yeah, there's a very good chance that he's like, all right, I'm gonna empty the tank and see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that there's a chance that Derek Lewis could take advantage of that and take him down or do something of that nature.
I think if it goes to a decision, it's Tuivasa's fight. But
whatever. Hey.
Yeah.
That's why we do this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. I mean, it makes
sense. Yeah, you do. You said throw it out the fucking window.
Yeah, and that's called being dramatic, Brandon. We're on a fucking podcast, all right? Nobody wants to say, you know what? You know, I don't hate your handicap, but here's why I don't. Because, all right, nobody wants to hear that guy. And that's why I'm going Lewis KOTKO. So, I mean, it's gonna be a fun one. And I'm happy that it's Ty because if Ty wins, there's a win-win situation here for us as Ty Tuivasa fans. If Ty wins, then he's going to be in line for a title shot. You know, one more fight and then a title shot. He's a title challenger after that. And who doesn't want to see Tai Tuivasa with a fucking gold belt around his waist on top of the UFC octagon doing a shoey? Like,
I mean, no. What we really want to see after this fight is that he said that if he wins, he will take
a cuppy
out of Derek Lewis's cup. And guess what? Derek Lewis's balls are hot.
They are very hot, Sarah. All
right. That'll wrap up that fight. I'm excited for the co-main. That's the one fight I think most people are most excited for, honestly, because then we move into the main event of the evening, a middleweight title bout of Israel, the last style bender, Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker, the number one ranked contender. We saw them fight 2 years ago, and Izzy knocked him out. And that was based off of Whittaker not necessarily having the greatest game plan, trying to move forward, trying to not keep distance. And you know Israel wants to keep distance, and he's just going to keep coming forward. He gets caught with the left hook, and, you know, that's all she wrote. So Israel Adesanya, minus 280. This is why this fight isn't such a big draw. I mean, a minus 280 favorite. I mean, it's not like a girls' main event at a UFC card where we got Valentina or Nunes that are minus 2,000. But Robert Whittaker, ever since that loss, pretty good bounce back. I mean, he's coming off of a beautiful win over Kelvin Gastelum, beat Jason Cannonier, beat Darren Till. I mean, ever since that fight, truthfully, he's looked dominant.
Yeah, I mean, the value is written all over Robert Whittaker here. And I know you're going to be on Robert Whittaker, so why don't you start and tell us why you like Robert Whittaker? Because I'm going to go against you, because you know that I'm an Izzy rider till I die. But I'll preface it with saying that the value, the smart bet here is Robert Whittaker. There's way too much value on him. But I'm going to go the opposite way and give myself a hedge with him, and I'll go further in after you give us the Whittaker handicap.
All right. So from my perspective, here's the way I look at this fight. Robert Whittaker, when he went and fought Izzy, like I already mentioned, I think that his game plan wasn't all there. I just think that he didn't have the right game plan to fight a guy like Izzy. And hey, look. Somebody finally cracked the puzzle on Israel Adesanya, and his name was Jan Błachowicz. He decides to move up in ranks, and guess what? He has a bigger guy than him that is able to manhandle and take him down at will. Nobody else has been able to do that. Look, Israel Adesanya is an unbelievable kickboxer, probably the best in all of the UFC, maybe one of the best ever, if you really look back at the history of it. One of the best strikers, kickboxers that we've ever seen.
Him and the Spider Silva.
Yeah, and he's got the win over him. I mean, end of his career, but you know what I mean. Anyways, whereas Whittaker is more of a well-rounded fighter. He's got the ability to grapple. He can do some takedowns. He showed that versus Gastelum, taking him down with ease throughout the entire fight. And I just think that this is a Robert Whittaker who has learned a lot since that fight versus Israel Adesanya. Now, what does that tell me on this fight? Look, we've got Izzy as a huge favorite, Whittaker as an underdog. I don't think that Robert Whittaker is ready to be a champion in the UFC. I think that Israel Adesanya...
Ready?
Like, I don't think... To win that division, I don't think he's ready. Bro, right now.
He held the division for 3 years.
Right now. I'm talking right now over...
Change your wording.
He's not ready to claim...
Beat Izzy.
He's ready
to claim a championship, brother. He's done it time after time.
He's not ready to get past Israel Adesanya.
There we go. That's the verbiage I wanted to hear. Thank you.
I thought that my point made sense by the fact that he's facing Israel Adesanya.
No, it sounded like you were saying he's not ready to grab the belt, not ready to beat the champion.
He's a championship type fighter.
Yes.
He's not a better champion at this time to beat Israel Adesanya. I think Israel Adesanya is so much more well-rounded. And after his loss to Jan Błachowicz, I think that his whole game plan changed. I think he's going to be... He is Jon Jones 2.0. He's going to be able to figure out later in his career how to keep his stamina, which he's always had, but to keep it so high in late-round fights, because he's always going to be fighting in five-round main event fights, and be able to use all of his tactics, everything that he's got. He's going to use the legs. He's going to use the body kicks, the leg kicks. He's going to use that jab. I mean, the unbelievable jab that is almost impossible. And then he's going to wait for you. He's going to wait for you to make a mistake. And I think Whitaker, as the challenger, feels he has something a little bit more to prove. And when you have that mentality, you're not as patient. And I think that patience here is key, and that is what leads me to the over-under of 4.5 in this fight. And everything to me screams that both these fighters are going to feel each other out at least a round or two. I'd say it could get into the deeper rounds. Obviously, the over-under is 4.5 for a reason. I think Whitaker is a better fighter than he was 2 years ago, even though like you mentioned, he is championship caliber. I think that these two stylistically make so much sense to have a long, really good fight that goes to the over, and I'm going to take the over of 4.5.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree on that point.
Yeah, I was just trying to I went a little AWOL on that one, but yeah. I was trying to give my perspectives on each and then how I think the fight could, you know, the outcome could come out. And to me, I see it as two really good fighters. Izzy, the better fighter, but I think he squeaks it out by points.
Well, you saved me a handicap on how I think Israel Adesanya is going to attack this fight. I believe he's learned a lot. He's going to, you know, really work the points. He'll attack if he needs to attack, but he knows it's going to go. He's going to try to get it to 5 rounds, and he's not going to let Rob get in an area that can shut the lights off. But really, one thing I wanted to preface here is just that whole game plan on how you beat Izzy. Just at middleweight, just take it and again, fucking throw it out, light it on fire. Actually, light it on fire and throw it out the window. Because do you know how much Jan Blachowicz walks around at?
Yeah, probably 220.
240, 245.
He cuts 30, 40 pounds. He cuts
almost 40 pounds. He weighs 205 for less than 30 minutes.
That's fucking nuts.
You know what he weighs in on fight night?
207.
230. He is so tall, so big.
Oh, on fight night, sorry.
On fight night.
Okay.
After the weigh-ins, he gains almost 25 pounds. That is, Robert Whittaker is never going to weigh that much. He's never going to be as tall and as lengthy and personally as strong. Jan Blachowicz is the strongest man in the 205-pound division. Pure strength. And Glover Teixeira shows what happens when good technique meets pure strength. And, you know, he out-wrestled him, whatever. But what Jan specifically did to Izzy is never going to happen with Robert Whittaker. He has the wrestling chops, I agree, but he does not nearly have the strength and the weight needed to bring Israel Adesanya down. Does that mean he's going to stop trying? No, that means that's a perfect reason to segue into the over of 4.5, which is part of my piggy parlay with Israel Adesanya at minus 270 to get that juice down from minus 270 to plus 130.
No interest in taking him by decision?
I haven't looked at the line. Usually when I parlay with the over, I'm going to get a better line.
By decision, it would be plus 150.
By decision, I mean, I'll probably have to go by decision then at plus 150 and just, you know, I'll give myself the cushion of a late round knockout, and it's only 20 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And look,
for everybody out there, depending on your situation, if you want 20 cents more of juice, you know, that option's there.
I would say here's a good guideline.
I got 50 cents earlier. This is so much different.
If anybody listens to this on the regular, they understand what we do with the half round of cushion at this point. Here's a guide on using a half round of cushion when it comes to taking a fighter to win by decision and a fighter parlayed with the over to get an extra half round of cushion. Here's a good guideline for you. If you're getting 50 cents of juice difference, take that half round of cushion. If you're getting anywhere between 40 and 10 difference between, you know, plus one, like here we're getting 20 cents of difference. So we're gonna take our cushion because that's not enough.
Right.
If you get 50 cents of difference, take that by decision. At 50 cents or over, take that by decision, and we'll run with that as a guideline when we're trying to do it too.
Okay, so as a lean, we're both going Adesanya to win.
As yes, and I'm doing the parlay with the over, and
So you've got him. Yeah, you've got him.
I haven't parlayed with the over, which I'm doing for two units, and then my lean's going to be a hedge with Whitaker. I'm putting that out there right now. That no, I'll leave it as a lean. We'll let you know if I end up doing this, but I was gonna take Whitaker and then I was gonna take Izzy in the over, because you can get, if I put 20 on Whitaker, that matches how much I'd be putting on Izzy there. It's not the smartest thing, but it is what it is. That's why we're gonna bring it up as an option for bettors, but we don't know if we're really gonna take that hedge with Whitaker. But the plus 130 on Izzy in the over is where I'm sitting here, because I just. Personally, I don't think Robert Whittaker, no one's been able to wrestle Izzy other than a guy that weighs, Izzy weighed in at 183 for that light heavyweight fight. 183.
Yeah, it was a ballsy tactic.
Ballsy tactic, but I get the speed thing.
Well,
but
that is to try to go double champ. You do what you do. Yeah.
And we all kind of thought Jan was going to strike with him, but Jan didn't. He wrestled, and that backfired on Izzy, and he learned from it. He's going to be a better fighter. But that's not going to happen again with Robert Whittaker. It's not. He doesn't have the strength.
That wraps up UFC 271, our best bets. What is your flag plant of the evening?
My flag plant is going to be Derek Brunson, baby, plus 130. You know, the burn dog's got to plant on a dog once in a while, and I fucking love this. I think Derek Brunson is a better fighter than Jared Cannonier.
I'll give two flag plants. I'm going to go with Casey O'Neill. I think that's an automatic lock if you want to lay juice. If not, you want to play it a little safer, we're going to go with Derek Lewis moneyline as my flag plant of the evening. My piggy parlay is O'Neill, Phillips, Cannonier, all parlayed to get a moneyline at plus 160.
I like it. But on the Casey O'Neill fight, please, if you eat the juice on that fight, take Roxanne by decision. she hasn't had a finish in I can't tell you how many, six fights. She had one armbar submission, and in nine fights was the last time she's been finished. So that fight's gonna go to decision. Hedge with her by decision if you're eating juice on Casey O'Neill, and thank me later.
UFC 271. Bird dog. Can't wait.
Let's do it. It's time.
All right. Well, welcome, or I should say farewell to everybody for the Barn Burner MMA show presented by Bet the Farm Podcast. UFC 271 Adesanya versus Whitaker 2. Go get that money. Bam, bam, bam.